You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Well, Pooley, I think we've got a players-only show again.
Finally!
What time does 6 o'clock roll around in your house? Usually around 6?
The problem is when it comes to, like, timing, I know this for a fact, is I will get lost. And Hayes, you've got to join in here because
he just casually slides in.
Which I love. But, like, in my mind, I'll take a peek. So, say the break is at 5:55. I'm like, okay, I've got 5 minutes to go and do. But I'll get caught in a Stop and Chat. All of a sudden, I'll roll and I'm grazing, I'm eating. Yeah, I'll stop and chat.
There's 40 people at his house.
Well, no, but you know, the kid is like, Daddy, can you know, you fix this toy? I need to plug this battery
in.
All of a sudden, you're doing something. And then on the way back, you're like, I got to hit the bathroom. I got plenty of time. And I don't know how many times it happens to me about twice a week where I come around the corner to my office and I can hear, like, back to Overdrive, or I can hear Hayes talking already, and I just quietly try and, like, melt back into my seat, and we just got Hayes. That's the thing.
Yeah, this is, I believe, the first time
I think it's the first time.
7 months. I'm generally, I've got the clock. Here's what I did. I just went hero mode, trying to win dad of the year, husband of the year, because my girls are on their way home, and we had the slow cooker going. Right.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah, I fired up some. I've been timing out the garlic bread. I started some, like, garlic bread in the 5 p.m. hour.
Yeah.
I went upstairs. I took that out. I cut that up. And then with the slow cooker, because it's so hot, I'm like, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to have their, you know,
portions
bowls of. I'm going to have everything ready for them, basically. And I lost track of time up there. And then, of course, I had to circle back and have a piece of garlic bread on the way downstairs because I'm a slob. And I can't avoid that option because, you know, it's staring at me when I went upstairs. So I thought I had a time, though. I came down, and clearly the clocks in my house, like on the stove, on everywhere around the house, they're off because I thought it was 5:59. And I get down here and I see you two. I'm like, this is not good.
Look at how comfortable we are inviting everyone into our homes. We don't even have to be there and we invite them in anymore.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've come a long way, guys.
We've come a long way. First time in over 7 months I'm late to get back from the break.
To your show.
Yeah, because I'm eating garlic bread and
that's
trying to act like a hero upstairs.
Yeah. Well, you have to do a taste tester.
It's a must.
The garlic bread staring at you, you have to have a bite. I mean,
no choice.
You have to. Well, we got a guy on the line who he knows what it's all about. He's got two girls.
Yeah.
He's married, so he's in a house full of girls just like I am, just like you have been your whole life, Pooley. And
I have been.
Noodles, you snuck a boy in late, so you're kind of, I guess, you even the field out in your house.
Yeah.
But I think I know who runs the show there.
Yeah.
Here is a longtime MLB-er from Fox Sports, Nick Swisher. What's happening, Nick?
Boys, what is good, fellas? How you guys holding up?
Well,
all right.
I was late to get back from the break for the first time. We've been doing the show from home for like 7 months, and garlic bread tripped me up, man. I had to go back for another piece.
The best line you had so far was you're like, you know what? I'm going hero mode. I'm going for it, right?
Yep.
I know exactly what that feels like, making sure you're doing everything for all your girls in the house. Oh, man, no doubt. So the fact you probably missed a little bit of time, I think we can excuse that. We got that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess it's up for the boys to allow me off the hook. And I'm sure I got a chirp or two in, or you guys got a chirp or two in before I got back on the mic. But
Maybe one or two.
That wasn't bad.
That's allowed.
We went right to the player would never be late.
Yeah, players only
show. The former player
show.
Would never be late because the former player show, Nick, you'd never be late for a meeting like this.
Hey, 100% agree. Yes, sir. 100% agree.
Well, you look like you're having a lot of fun in retirement, man. You're working for Fox. You're doing stuff with the Yankees. Your Instagram is hilarious. Like, you're on fire on Instagram. Are you having more fun with retirement, or do you wish you were still playing?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you guys all know exactly what I'm thinking, right? Like, I miss the locker room. I miss the guys. I miss the stories. I miss all that. I miss the competition. But, man, my body feels great. I can do anything I want. any time of day. I've knocked five strokes off my game since quarantine hit. Like, I feel like at this moment, you know, it's such a blessing to be able to have had this awesome run and to be able to make some money, to be able to do these amazing things. But for me, I think more than anything, bro, I've been able to be home and be a dad, and I love that. You know, my dad was a big leaguer, and he wasn't home all the time. So to be able to be home and to be a father to my two girls, bro, like, I just want to be super dad. I want to be there every day, and I'm loving being able to be home.
Yeah, that's very, very cool to hear. And you, like I said, your Instagram is pretty hilarious to track, and you're married to an actress, and you've done some acting in the past. And we'll get to the ball game here in a moment, but I wanted to ask you, and I've been thinking about this for a while, like, what made you more nervous, stepping into the batter's box in the World Series or stepping onto a set for the first day and having to act even though you were playing yourself?
Oh, set, stepping on stage, bro, because, like, I'm a decent baseball player. I'm a horrible actor, right? You know what I mean? So I was running lines with my wife. I mean, my fiance at the time. I was running lines with her every night, right? You know, trying to get ready for this. And then when you get up there, man, it's so in the moment, right? And you do this, you do the scene 100 times, right? So you're like, wow, it's crazy. What are they looking for? And then you start to get a little self-conscious. And then I'm like, oh, man. But I think for myself, dude, to be able to do those are bucket list things. I'm like, man, I'm just a little dude. I'm a dude from West Virginia, bro. Like, I never thought I would be able to do these awesome things. So anytime I get the opportunity to do those, bro, uncomfortable or not, bro, I'm 2 feet in. I'm going to do it.
Nick, part of hero mode for me raising my three daughters was we had to go see the Notre Dame baseball team all the time, and I was the hockey coach there. So we watched a young Nick Swisher strut into Notre Dame Stadium circa 2000, 2001 with the big bat. You going back that far?
Oh, yeah, baby. I can go back all the way.
Great weekend series.
I totally remember that.
Great weekend series.
Because for myself, I was such a huge Notre Dame football, you know, a football fan growing up. So when we got to be able to go to Notre Dame and play in that Super Regional, I'll never forget it. Dude, we went on the field. I saw Touchdown Jesus in person. I'm like, bro, this place is amazing. So I just tried to soak up all of that because that took me back to, like, the Rudy days, right? Rudy Rudiger, right? Like, you know,
absolutely.
Back when I was a little kid growing up. So it was awesome, man. Yeah, like, what an opportunity. And obviously to be able to go you know, playing such a prestigious school, even for that weekend, bro, it was awesome, bro. I'll never forget it.
We're chatting with Nick Swisher, longtime big leaguer, World Series winner with the Yankees, Fox Sports MLB analyst, game one of the World Series tonight. Are you rooting for Clayton Kershaw? Do you want to see him perform and win just so we can stop talking about, you know, his playoff performances throughout his career?
Yeah, you feel like that is definitely the narrative of Clayton Kershaw. It's like all of a sudden October hits and that's exactly what we start talking about. I think he's done so many things in the regular season. It's almost like we need him to do this so we can validate him as the Hall of Famer we think he is. On top of that, I think more than anything, bro, this guy has done so much for the city of Los Angeles, for the game of baseball, just the communities that he's a part of. Like, the guy gives back and does things the right way. He's a role model to so many young kids. And to be able to have somebody like that at the forefront of your organization is amazing. So I feel like you have to root for somebody like that, you know? I was fortunate enough to be part of a 2009 World Series team where Alex Rodriguez broke out of his playoff, you know, I guess, funk, you could say, and really kind of, you know, helped, you know, drive us to win that World Series. So I was able to see firsthand what it's like to see the chains just ripped off of somebody and just the freeness that they have. And I'm obviously, you know, I mean, from the way I'm talking, I'm hoping that happens to Clayton Kershaw on this World Series.
So back in 09 with A-Rod, you know, in New York, you're inside the clubhouse. You're playing. So you're not too concerned about what people are writing in the papers or talking about on sports radio. But was that the storyline, like A-Rod breaking out, or was it still about kind of Jeter getting back to the dance and picking up a fifth ring? Or
well,
sixth
I think
ring,
just
I think.
In general, you got to remember, I mean, 2008, I mean, they didn't make the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, that was the last year of old Yankee Stadium. So 2009 was that first year of new Yankee Stadium, right? And everybody knows in 1932, first year of old Yankee Stadium, they won the World Series. So there was always a lot of talk about, obviously, the Yankee way. I mean, if you either win the World Series or you don't, I mean, that's either a successful season or not. I think that's exactly where the standards are held. So I just, you know, Shoot, I got all off track, bro. What were we talking about? I
just had A-Rod and Jeter.
I had like 16 different stories going on. I was like, well, this and this and this. No, but I think to be able to have that guy in the locker room was awesome. But I definitely think that was a huge storyline, was A-Rod breaking out, right? He had multiple huge home runs for us. You know, he was a major leader for us, you know, for myself, the 4 years that I was there. And obviously right now, just, you know, being as successful off the field as he ever was on the field.
So what is the feeling throughout baseball? Like, you're out of it now, so you're not worried about making money or contracts in terms of ownership, you know, splashing money around. But Tampa is basically making, like, $25,000 total as a team. Like, they make no money, and they're in the World Series. Like, if you're a free agent and you're coming up, I don't think I'm rooting for Tampa, because if they win, now every owner in baseball is going to be like, I guess we can slash payroll and still win a World Series.
Yeah, well, I think everything the Oakland A's have done, as well as the Tampa Bay Rays, I think they've definitely proven that it works. I think if you have your correct algorithm that works for your organization, you could pick the guys that you need. I think that's amazing, right? Could you imagine, you know, putting in some sort of an investment for like $20 and getting this massive, you know, profit coming back? That's exactly what the Tampa Bay Rays do. I don't think many free agents want to go to Tampa, regardless if you win a World Series or not, because the money's not there. You know, so I think for what they've done, it's impressive. But I think the storyline of this World Series, I think, is the Dodgers, right? It's like, come on, man, third time, 4 years, it's about time they do it. It's almost like it's written in the stars. Clayton Kershaw somehow ends up being the game one starter because they needed to use Walker Buehler. But still, it's like it's set up for them. It feels like the right pick. But, man, Randy Arozarena from the Rays and everything that they've done, they're exciting, they're fun. I think watching a team like that, man, it should let you know that there's a lot of joy in the game of baseball as well, you know?
You talk about the money and the Dodgers, and how much has Mookie Betts meant to that team, as much off the field as on the field?
Yeah, 100%. You win one World Series, that $436 million already paid for itself, you know? It's just kind of, he's the type of guy that, you know, it's funny, Mike Trout signs this huge contract, you know, Bryce Harper signs these huge contracts, Manny Machado signs these huge contracts. You know, you don't hear about Mike Trout or Mookie Betts making that money because you're like, dude, they're totally worth it. They're worth every penny. Everybody else we kind of break down a little bit. But I think for what he's done, not only, like you said, on the field, but I think in that locker room. And not only that, man, you've been able to see some of these amazing catches he's made this offseason. I mean, he doesn't look like an athlete, but he gets out there, bro, and he's the best athlete on the field. And his personality shines through. He loves the game. I saw a quote today that the Dodgers' DNA is all about winning, or the Dodgers' philosophy is all about winning, and that's right. That lines up with my DNA. So he's a winner. He wants to be a winner. And, you know, hopefully at the end of this World Series, if they can get it done, he'll be one.
Yeah, well, exactly. And he's already got the ring from Boston from a couple of years ago. And
correct, yeah.
And, like, you know the curse of the Babe, and they broke through on that in 04. I mean, I don't think the Red Sox are concerned about a trade from almost 100 years ago or over 100 years ago. But there is some concern now that Boston moving on from Mookie Betts, like, they're not going to be able to live that down, because how do you trade a guy basically for money?
100%. I mean, look at New England in general. Tom Brady's in Tampa kicking ass. Mm-hmm. Mookie Betts is out in L.A. doing his thing. You know, the Lightning just won the Stanley Cup. I mean, come on, bro. There's a lot of amazing – the Rays are in the World Series. There's a lot of great things that are going on here in Tampa. So, you know, we'll see what's going to happen, man. Yeah. It should be a great series. I'm really, really excited. This is kind of one of those series that, you know, I don't think it's going to be ridiculously high scoring like we're used to seeing in some of these games. I think the pitching is so tremendous on both sides. I'm really interested to see this, man. It's going to be a great matchup.
Yeah, it's going to be fun with Nick Swisher. We'll get you out of here on the bat flip topic, which I'm sure you've talked to death over the years. But Bellinger pimped that home run a couple of nights ago.
Oh, right? Yeah,
bro. It was swag. But where do you stand on that, you know, the whole conversation revolving around it?
Oh, hell, man. I wish I could have done it. No doubt about it, bro. But back when I was doing it, if you would have done that, bro, that next one would have been right in your rib. 100%.
Yeah.
It is different to see how the game has evolved. But, you know, I mean, you know, if you want to be part of the game moving forward, you have to stay fluid. You have to stay open to the new things that are going to happen. Obviously, analytics is playing a huge part of the game. I'm sure there's a lot of baseball purists that don't agree with that. And that's okay, right? I mean, that's why the game is great. There's a lot of different philosophies on what you think. But for me, man, like, you know, if you don't want me to dance, bro, don't let me get in the end zone. You know, I get to the end of the day, you know? So for what these guys are doing, and, you know, it just seems like baseball now is such a feast or famine game. It's either home runs or strikeouts. Or, you know, pitchers would rather walk guys than giving up a hit. Because these guys are so athletic and big and strong, and with the velocity sitting around 95-plus on an average, I mean, when you make contact with that, I mean, wow. I mean, that's just, it's your exit velo off the chart. So, you know, for me, I mean, I try and look at it from a pitcher standpoint. It's got to be hard. But these guys can throw 100 miles an hour. I was never able to do that, man. So I think that's definitely an advantage.
Yep, I'm with you on that. Well, it's going to be a fun one tonight and throughout the series. Enjoy it, Nick. Really appreciate you taking time, man. We'll do this again down the road. Thank you for this.
Oh, hell yeah, fellas, man. You guys have a good day, man. I'll talk to y'all soon.
You got it. Nick Swisher from Fox Sports.
I want to be his best friend.
Yeah.
I love that.
Okay,
man.
Guys, wait a second. Turn the clock back and picture a junior in college strutting to the on-deck circle. Okay.
Yeah.
The hair flowing. You think?
Swag.
You think he had swag
game.
In college?
He has game.
He was great.
He's got game.
He was great. He had the whole crowd fired up. And it'd be, you know, the little stadium sat like 3,500 and be just packed for those super regional games. And he was just loving it. Home team against Nick Swisher. He was absolutely loving it. He was a player, boy.
Well, he played football. He played basketball. Like, he's just a pure athlete. And, yeah, he was I guess he went to the Buckeyes, right? Was he Ohio State, I believe? And
he was Ohio State, yeah. He was Ohio State baseball player, but a real good high school football player. Because I remember talking to our guys back then, our football coaches who were also watching the baseball series, talking about how they'd recruited him to play football at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, he's a big-time athlete.
And speaking of that, I'm pretty sure Kyler Murray made the right decision, right? Like, he could have been grinding in the minors. Or maybe he's up with Oakland by now and he's making a certain amount of money. Or he's lighting up the Dallas Cowboys on Monday Night Football and he's got a chance at taking his Arizona Cardinals back to the playoffs for the first time in a long time.
You know what? So, flip it the other way, though, Brian. You know, I was there when Jeff Samardzija was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a first-team All-American wide receiver. You know, going across the middle, and what has he had? 15 years as
he
a
made
major
the right
baseball
call.
Pitcher.
Yep. Yeah. His arm stayed alive. He made a lot of money,
and he's healthy as can be.
Yep. Oh, it goes both ways. You know, it's a tough call. I mean, Murray was such a unique scenario because he was the 9th overall pick, I believe, in baseball.
Right.
Like the number one prospect in Oakland's organization, or close to it, anyway, or first overall pick in the NFL. I mean, those are just two remarkable options.
That's ridiculous. That's
Samardzija was going to be a first round pick in the NFL, maybe second, and I don't think he went until the later rounds in baseball.
He went in the 5th round in baseball.
Yep.
And the Cubs took him because they knew they had a chance to sign him, and they gave him like second round money to sign.
Yeah.
But he would have been a first rounder in football.
Yeah. Yeah. He was him and Brady Quinn, right? Like that was
great,
Charlie Weiss and. Yep, they never got over the top in Notre Dame with Charlie. There's another
actually,
guy.
Actually, they lost to a guy we've had on today, Bobby Carpenter. Bobby Carpenter was part of that linebacking corps with A.J. Hawk.
With the Buckeyes.
On the Buckeyes that beat them in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yep, that's right. All right, we'll get back into some NHL stories, golf stories with Tiger returning to the field this weekend, and a big fight in the UFC on Saturday night. And Khabib is going to be back in the octagon. And if he gets past Justin Gaethje, he wants to take on George St. Pierre. The last time I checked was legitimately retired, not Conor McGregor retired.
Not going
actually
back.
Retired. But we'll tell you about what Khabib has in his sights or what he'd like to see in his sights down the road. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, thanks again to Nick Swisher for joining us. Always cool to catch up with him.
He's that his first appearance on the show?
Never had him on before.
He was great.
He was great.
He brings the
Won't
energy
be his last.
At the very least. No, it can't be. We've got to go back to that well. We've got to get Swisher back on down the road. And he's excited for the World Series tonight. I think we all are at this point. And I'm excited for a big UFC card over the weekend where Khabib is returning for the first time in a long time. And he's fighting Justin Gaethje, and Khabib is a favorite. Khabib is undefeated in the UFC. And the belief is, and I have to believe that this is what Dana White and others have in mind, is that Khabib probably beats Gaethje. Maybe not. I mean, Gaethje can fight, clearly. But Khabib beats Gaethje. Conor McGregor beats Dustin Poirier. And then it's McGregor-Habib 2.0.
There's your guy.
When you got fans back in, it's in Vegas. And that would be probably the most lucrative fight in the history of the UFC. But you got to get a couple of wins before you get there, right? Habib's got to win. McGregor's got to win in January against Poirier. But Habib was talking about it today, and he's talked about it in the past. Like his idol, I guess, was GSP. And he fights a lot like George St. Pierre. He's very tactical. And, you know, GSP is an all-time great fighter. And Habib has always looked up to him and has immense respect for him. But Habib wants to fight him. And he's brought this up before, you know, the idea of fighting him. And I believe GSP has answered to it in the past and said, you know, I'm retired. I haven't been in the octagon in a long time. Not to mention he'd have to cut weight. Like GSP usually fights at 170.
Right.
And Habib's at 155. So if you're retired, and on top of coming back from retirement, you have to cut weight and a lot of weight, it's a massive disadvantage, man. I wouldn't want to see GSP fight Habib. I think it would get potentially ugly.
Well, and what does he have to gain out of it, GSP?
Nothing.
Exactly, nothing.
Like he solidified his legacy and who he is.
Agreed.
And he's healthy.
Exactly. That's another thing. For the most part, I think you leave with your health, you know, you hope.
That's, in that business, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw, we never talked about it on the show, that reverse knockout kick. Yeah. Was it Joaquin Buckley? That's one of the
most vicious,
unreal kicks I've ever seen.
Ever. You're ever going to see.
Ever.
And it was televised live, and it just went viral immediately.
I know.
Phenomenal.
I was watching
reaction.
It was
just a crazy reaction.
And you hope that, you know, I can't remember the guy that he was fighting, but you hope that he was all right because he was out on his feet.
Yeah, he was out before he hit the mat.
Yeah.
Out.
That was insane. But it was a great kick. You just didn't see it coming. Like, I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No.
Like, it was unreal. But
well, there's been a number of those, you know, over the years in the UFC. There's always, like, just crazy knockouts, but
I was at UFC 100 in Vegas. GSP fought that night, and Michael Bisping was knocked out that night, I think, by a guy named Dan Henderson.
Yeah, Henderson.
It was one of the craziest knockouts you've ever seen. It was like a flying, like, Superman punch, and it, like, we were pretty close to the ring, and it was unreal. Like, to see that whole scenario. I think Brock Lesnar fought that night, Frank Mara or something. Like, it was UFC. It was an unreal setting.
Yeah, that was like one of the biggest cards ever, because it was 100. UFC 100, and that was when Lesnar was kind of running things. Like,
yeah,
it was
crazy.
The Masvidal kick, like flying knee to Askren's face.
Yeah.
That was the quickest knockout in the history of the UFC. I think it was like 5 seconds into the fight.
Yeah.
And Askren was one of those guys who, you know, talks a lot of smack, and he hypes up his card, and he hypes up his history and his fighting record and all that kind of stuff, which all these guys do.
Right.
And Masvidal, who's got, you know, an attitude on him to begin with, was like, I'm going to get you. And I guess he studied the tape, because Askren had a history of doing that. Like, he'd kind of come in with his head down and try to grapple and try to get you to the mat as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And Masvidal studied the tape, knew that it was coming, or felt like it was probably coming.
Yeah.
And he just went with it, and he said, I'm flying through the air with my knee up, and he cracked him.
Oh.
And Askren was out, like, standing, and then just tipped over.
Yeah.
Like, was flat done. Up. Was dead weight.
Yeah, scary.
It was crazy. Yeah, crazy.
Scary, scary stuff.
But anyway, so we got that going this weekend, and we got Tiger back in the field.
Yeah.
The Zozo Championship down at Sherwood Oaks, and we haven't seen Tiger I don't think we've seen him since the U.S. Open, and it didn't go so well for Eldrick.
Well, that's his home course down there in California, too, right?
Yep.
One of his home courses, anyway. He's got multiple home courses.
He's got a few of them. You could argue Augusta's his home course, or it has been for 20 years.
But I think he lived there. That's where Gretz lived, or might still live, isn't it?
Yeah, Thousand
Sherwood,
Oaks or whatever it is.
Sherwood. Yeah, that's – I've got a – I know a guy who lives on that golf course and golfs it all the time. Said it's an unreal course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So. And Tiger's won there before. He's the defending champion of this tourney, and he's back in the field. And this is basically a tune-up. Like, I'm not expecting much out of him, but it's all about getting ready for Augusta National, and that's happening in a month, which is still wild. Like, when you think of the schedule and you're trying to prepare and Yeah. The fact that the Masters has not been played yet, and the beauty of the Masters in April for Canadian golfers is it usually what comes with the Masters is the opening of our golf season.
Kicks it off.
It kicks it off, right, Pooley? Like, if you're lucky and we got a mild winter and courses open by the end of March, early April, you're playing in the morning and watching the final round in the afternoon.
It's perfect. I can just imagine what that place will look like in the fall, too. I mean, it'll be...
You think they'll try to clear up all the leaves, or will there just be leaves all over the place?
There'll be a leaf on the ground.
No.
It's the most meticulous place.
Yeah.
And, they're not going to be dealing with crowds, so they'll be able to have the grounds crews out there. But guaranteed it'll be gorgeous and meticulous.
Yeah. You're probably right about that. So we still have that to look forward to. And, in terms of the NHL, we talked about this earlier. There still are, some decent names in terms of unrestricted free agents.
Yeah, your buddy Cody Ceci signed the other day, pretty value contract, 1-2, I think, to Pittsburgh.
Like, yep.
That's the thing. Like, value contracts, it just makes you look different at the player. Like, Cody Ceci was making $4.5 million last year. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, for $4.5 million, he certainly didn't give you what you expected out of him. I was hoping, I'd watched him in Pooley, you watched him a lot in Ottawa when you did games. I thought there was something there. I personally did. Like, I thought there was, he's got a lot of the tools. I think some nights where, either struggles with decision-making and certainly with confidence when he got here to Toronto. But at $1.2 million, I'd have no problem taking a flyer and having him play farther down in your lineup.
Well, you think of some of the guys they've resurrected there, Justin Schultz being a good example of a guy that, couldn't play anywhere else and was just fine there.
Yeah,
and got his game back together. But Cody Ceci, I go all the way back to junior, and we'd actually, during his draft year, went to Niagara Falls, to the old arena in Niagara Falls, to watch him play in a bandbox. We wanted to see how he reacted against a really aggressive Niagara Falls team in a small arena, and he handled things fine. But it was almost like he just never, he never hit the level that everybody thought he was going to, so then it wasn't enough. Because he wasn't what everyone projected him to be, then it wasn't good enough. And it'll be a place for him to have a safe landing and a soft landing, hopefully. And he'll be behind, Letang. He'll be behind that big Marino kid. So settle in comfortably in the third pair and just worry about playing.
Yeah, and not in a Canadian market anymore, right? So if you're a Senator fan or a Maple Leaf fan, you're not going to watch him every night. And he might put up some okay numbers. And then all of a sudden you're going to be like, wow, where was that? That doesn't mean that the warts in his game aren't still there. They probably will be. You're not getting a new player just because you got a new address. But you might find some new confidence. And you're right about the contract. You're just the impression, the expectations, everything changes based on the dollar amount in the cap
era.
It
sure does.
And, there's a couple of former Leafs. Like, Kapanen's going to be an interesting guy to follow, because if Rutherford called the shots – and ultimately it's going to come down to the head coach. But the GM was saying that there's a chance he plays with Crosby and Gensel. And if he does and he can connect with those two, he's going to have a career year.
Yeah, he's going to have a career year. He's the type of player that's fit with Sidney in the past, though. It's not the high-speed guy who fits with Crosby. It's more of the Gensel type of player, the Connor Sheary. Think of Kunitz. Think of the players that go back to Pascal Dupuis. Who he made a star of. And that's, when you take a true superstar like Sidney Crosby, if you're on the same page with him, he's going to make a star out of you.
Right.
I mean, look at Gensel. I have a good friend whose son played with Gensel at Nebraska Omaha. He said, if you'd ever told me that he would be a star player in the NHL, but what I watched in college, there was no way. It was a modest third-round draft pick. And, he got to a different level of work ethic and everything else. And he got Sidney Crosby. And if you get him and you can think the game, that's where you've got to be able to think at a different level, Brian. And that's where I'm not sure Kapanen, the skill set's there, but I'm not sure he can think it at the level that it takes to play and be successful.
I think it's probably going to be a missed opportunity for him. And the Pens are maybe asking too much of him, but I think he's going to get the chance, right? Like, they acquired him for a reason. He's going to get a chance to play at times with either Sid or with Gino, and it's a chance for him to truly make his career.
Right.
And, if he puts up a couple of good years, he's got 2 years left at 3.2 or whatever. He puts up a couple of really good years, and he's a UFA, and he'll still only be in his mid-20s. Right. And the cap will be going up in 2 years. He's going to get paid. You know, that's how he should be approaching it.
If his style of play, you know, he's go, and you think of when he was at his best, he's getting it in full flight, you know, up through the neutral zone. Whereas with Crosby, it's almost like playing off him, you know, where you're just reading what's happening and you're filling space around him. You're not taking the space and you're not deciding what's happening out there. He's deciding what's happening and you're just filling in the gaps.
And he doesn't want you cheating either. He's got no one.
No.
That's what I worry about. And we all have played with guys and certainly watch guys who have all the tools, but don't have the toolbox to put them in. And that's, right. You know, saying it lightly. And, you know, I've played with great players that, you know, you call them almost five-tool players, where they've got everything, but they can't think the game at a high rate, or their hockey IQ is not as sharp, or their reactionary and instincts are off. Like, there's something missing from their game. It'd be interesting to see if Kapanen, if he gets the opportunity with Gino, if he gets the opportunity with Sid, if he can mesh and think the game with them. He can certainly skate it and, you know, the hands and all that are there, but can he react to what Sid is thinking on the ice and be a step ahead of him? That's where I think a guy like Gensel has come out. He seems like a cerebral player. So
no
he'll
question.
He needs to get to exactly where he needs to be for Sid to get him the puck or to win a loose puck battle. That's what Kunitz was really good at. That's what Dupuis was really good at, is loose puck battles, getting to open ice where Sid can find you. I don't know if Kapanen has that in his game.
Oh, he hasn't proven to over the
few years. When you think of him alone, it's a solo effort. It's full speed, you know, off the off wing and cutting, getting the long pass, the stretch pass through the neutral zone.
He had a breakaway in the playoffs that he curled up and looked for a pass.
Yeah.
Remember that against Columbus?
Yeah.
A partial breakaway.
Yep. Well, that's his play. Like that, he's famous. That is his signature move, is take it wide, and then instead of just putting your shoulder down and saying, I'm going all the way to the net, you can either drag me down or I'm scoring or I'm going to get an opportunity, he curls up.
Right.
Like Kapanen curls up. Nylander curls up.
Right.
You know, Marner has a tendency to curl up. So, you know, and that doesn't jive with the way that Crosby generally plays, you know, as you've stated, both of you. So, but we'll see. And I think what you got to remember from a Leaf standpoint is that the context of the deal was not so much about the player; it was about the cap hit, right? And changing your roster. So, if Kapanen goes on and puts up a career year, good for him. It was still the move that the Leafs felt they had to make to bring in something different, because history was suggesting that it wasn't going to change, you know, with the makeup of the team that they had. So they needed to clear money, and they wanted to bring in a guy like Wayne Simmonds. So that's the comparable, I guess.
But, you know, but I mean, as we do in this market, and it's not just reserved for this market, we're going to follow Kapanen. If Kapanen goes and scores 25 or 30 goals in Pittsburgh and Johnsson goes to New Jersey and finds his game again, and the guys who replaced them, I mean, you know, poor Alex Kerfoot here was every second compared to Nazem Kadri,
who had an
amazing season in Colorado, different surrounding, different type of pressure, and was slotted properly as a second-line center there. But the deal wasn't Kadri for Kerfoot. It was Kadri for Kerfoot and Barry. You know, so it was unfairly, I guess, weighted a little bit. But ultimately, that's what's going to happen. We're going to be watching these former Leafs, and if they go on and have success, and the guys who filled their shoes don't live up to, if Wayne Simmonds doesn't live up to what Wayne Simmonds can do, and that's Kapanen's spot, and he goes and scores 25, and Simmonds scores 12, what are we going to be talking about?
Yeah, the comparison will be there if the Leafs don't also pull their weight as a team.
Agreed.
I mean, ultimately, if the Leafs win and go on a run, even if Wayne Simmonds doesn't even play, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But if you hit a wall, or you don't at least meet or exceed expectations, then you're absolutely right. That'll be the compare and contrast. That's what it was with Kerfoot and Kadri all year. Colorado was better. Kadri was better. So the trade sucked. You know,
it was more complex
than that. But
there was a sportscaster in Boston. You may know him from horse racing. His name was Bob Neumeier.
Mm-hmm.
He's always seen him at the Kentucky Derby or the big horse races. But he was a broadcaster, one of the network guys in Boston. And he would show every highlight of every former Boston athlete. So if somebody got traded from the Red Sox, from the Celtics, from the Bruins, and you'd score a goal for another team, and he'd show the highlight and say, why can't we get guys like that? That was his standard go-to. Holmgren, why can't we get guys like that? That was his big go-to
move. And that's when Boston was not such a sports town, right? Like, they were diehards, but the teams weren't pulling their weight.
Actually, you know what? The only team that wasn't pulling its weight when I was there was the Patriots. Yeah. The Red Sox went to the World Series. The Celtics had the big three. They were always there.
Yeah, I guess so in the 80s.
Yeah, we went to the finals late, early
90s. So what the hell
90s.
Was that guy's problem? I mean,
he still did it.
Yeah,
like
I guess
that was the joke, you know. I mean, we were going to the Stanley Cup Finals. We were a good team. It was like we weren't soft. You trade a guy away, and he'd show his one goal of the week and say, "Why can't we get guys like that?"
Yeah. Well, listen. Maybe there's definitely a market for that in this town.
I'm talking about him 30 years later. He must have had something going.
He made a mark on you, buddy. He dragged out some sort of a reaction from you.
He did.
But even with the Kapanen deals, people point out it's not like Simmons. It opened up cap space for Simmons and more. Really, kind of.
Our first round draft pick is the unknown.
Right. But like, that's what it really is. It's the like Rodion Amirov. If he turns into a player, then you know it's all good. It can be. It might be a win for both teams. That is allowed to happen.
We all thought the first rounder was going to be used for different purposes. I mean, that was the immediate speculation was. Mm-hmm. And Kyle Dubas said, you know, the first rounder could be in play. And when that didn't happen, it changed the view, and now it's a long-term asset.
Which I think is the right play now. Like, now that we know how everything else has gone here, I think they went after Brody, they got him. They went after Thornton, they got him. Mm-hmm. They went after Simmons, they got him. Like, those, my understanding is those were the three targets. Like, they really wanted those three players, and they got all three. So if your offseason is going to go off without a hitch, for the most part, then you might as well add to the future as well. You know, what was the point of throwing that first-round pick on the table for a deal that might have been used if they didn't feel like they could get the other guys?
Right,
you know?
Right.
But they obviously felt somewhat confident that they would because they used the pick, went out there and signed their guys. I think they got the best of both worlds. You know, and that probably isn't brought up enough.
Five of the six players they brought in, so put Brody aside, Kyle Dubas used the word competitive, and each one of them has something to prove. I mean, Zach Bogosian has to prove it wasn't just because he was playing with either Ryan McDonough or Victor Hedman. Right. And Jimmy Vesey's got to prove he was the player he was in college. Mm-hmm. You know, the All-American and the Hobie Baker winner, and that's what he's got to prove. And Joe Thornton's got to prove he can still play at 41 years old.
Right.
Wayne Simmons got to prove that he's healthy. I mean, they've all talked about what they have to prove, but the word competitiveness was used in every description that you heard of each of those players.
Well, Pooley, wouldn't you agree? I mean, Brian, we talked about this yesterday. Like, I think they look better on paper. I think there's more balance there. But there's also, for me, more question marks. Because what is Barabanov? Is that, am I pronouncing his name correctly?
Barabanov, yep.
Barabanov, what's Lettinen going to look like? Is Anderson, you know, going to make the team? Like, you know, what is, to your point, Pooley, what's Jimmy Vesey going to look like? Bogosian, Thornton at 41, Simmons after some injuries. Like, on paper, it looks good, and the theme is
the
there.
Sum
as
of the
far
parts,
as, the sum of the parts
appear to be quality.
Great, but the question mark is that going to be enough to make them better, you know, make them harder to play against? But to me, there's just so many question marks with this team that need to be answered as they play.
Yeah, and especially if they're in an all-Canadian division, where I think that is a more difficult division than the Atlantic.
That could be fun. That could be fun.
Yeah, I hope it happens.
That might really be fun. Yeah,
now everyone's waiting for it, right? Now everyone wants it. Everyone's waiting for it. Now if you pull the shoot on that, I'll be disappointed. I think a lot of people will be throughout the country. But if you're in the Atlantic, Detroit, you know you're beating them. Ottawa, you know you're beating them. I think you know you're beating Buffalo. I think Florida's taken a big step back, personally. So I think
Boston may have taken a step back.
And Boston has as well with guys leaving and with injuries. So, you know, I'd much prefer to be in the Atlantic and be fighting for a top three spot plus wild card options over a Canadian division where if it's top three or top four, you know, outside of Ottawa, you're fighting it out, man.
Yeah, it's a free for all.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. It is. I think there's six teams that are legit in Canada, like legit. And, you know,
and Ottawa's going to be no picnic.
Ottawa's going to be no picnic. And 2 years from now will be real interesting to see how that team shapes up and unfolds. You know, there's some teams Pooley, you just mentioned, like Boston still has some stuff to sort out, and they've got the two injuries to Marchand and Pasternak. But there's other teams that really haven't taken a step back, if anything. Like, I think Buffalo with Taylor Hall has gotten, and Cody Eakin.
They have to be better.
Eric Staal. And then you like, I'm expecting a guy like Jeff Skinner to look more like Jeff Skinner, like, I guess his sample
even a couple
size.
Of years ago. A couple years ago, he had 40 or was close to it.
But let's say Dallin has to be better.
I mean, Dallin, like, you know, I like the goalie there. Like, I think Buffalo may not. Like, I think sneakily they've really become a competitive team. I don't know if that's enough. We'll see once they play. But Jack Eichel's not going anywhere.
No,
right
they're going to be fine. I still think they're behind the Leafs on paper for sure, but they're better. You know, they're certainly better. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Tee up game one of the World Series again. And we'll wrap up what's been, I'd say, a fairly predictable yet unpredictable show. I was late for a segment. Nick Swisher dropped 4,000 bros.
Yeah, that was a fun show so far.
Yeah, Twitter's been blowing up. Like, this is the most engagement we've ever had on any tweet. And, of course, it's me, day one, Peter Griffin, wearing a tablecloth with a collar.
You are engaged. You might have been broing somebody right there.
I probably was. That was Nick Swisher energy on the left. I'll say
that. You might have been broing somebody.
I was making
right
a first
up on the
impression.
Edge of your seat.
Yeah, it wasn't physical. It was radio. But I was making an impression from an audible standpoint or audio standpoint.
Come on, bro.
I was making noise, bro. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, game one of the World Series tonight, and time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the props tonight, a Rosarena over the number, runs batted in, it's paying a big clip. He's been lights out for Tampa. I think that continues. And I'm going to go over the number, Bellinger with a hit, over the number, Mookie Betts with a hit. Throw down 20, you can score 65. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. I think I'm on the Dodgers, but everyone seems to be on the Dodgers, so I'm sure Vegas is thinking if Tampa can squeeze one out here, they're going to make some money.
Let's take seven out of it like we did in the – let's take seven out of it. Let's just make sure we get it to go to seven.
Yeah, exactly.
As both did.
That's what I'm looking for.
Want.
Absolutely. With
Tampa,
a couple of days off.
Do you want Tampa to win?
No, they are. They just won a championship.
Yeah.
Of course, LA did too.
Exactly. They just won too. They're both feeling pretty good. Tampa wins here, they have a chance at history here with the Lightning winning, the Rays winning, and then Tom Brady and the Buccaneers could close out a three-pack of victories. That is compelling. So for that alone, I would say maybe Tampa would be more of an interesting win. But the Kershaw factor, as we keep talking about it, for him to get a ring and the Dodgers to finally break through, would also be a great story.
Yeah, I'm on the Dodgers.
Yeah, I think the Dodgers are going to end up winning this, but I think it'll be close. I think it's going 6 or 7 for sure. All right, Pooley, great stuff, buddy. Thank you for doing this as always.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Always a pleasure to drop in.
There he is, Dave Poon. I believe Jonas is coming back. I think Hedge will be back later in the week.
Nice.
Johnny will be back at some point. The O-Dog will be back next week.
Yeah. Who?
But, he's. I don't know what he's doing. He's probably watching right now.
Yeah, he is, for sure.
He probably is. All right, we're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the game tonight. We are back tomorrow at
4 p.m. We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority. With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.